Physical solitude is to be followed up with psychological non-attachment, which is really the commencement of true yoga. In fact, when we are psychologically detached in an effective manner, physical seclusion may not be necessary. This is a slightly advanced stage where the physical environment does not very much influence the condition of the mind, because the mind has studied the world more deeply now and is able to look at it with a proper vision and in a correct perspective. Earlier, the vision was distorted and there was a series of wrong impressions which the world created in the mind, due to which there was a chance of getting attached to various things, objects of the world. And inasmuch as the mind is the principal factor determining our life in every way, whatever its condition is, that is our condition also. Mind is man, man is mind. We are asked to live in seclusion physically to enable the mind to train itself properly, because in a confused physical atmosphere or a chaotic environment, it will be difficult for the mind to adjust itself to the required disciplinary procedures as demanded in the practice of yoga. It is necessary that we should, as far as possible, live physically in conditions which are not too obstructive, hampering or opposing, not even tempting. Balavan indriya gramo vidvamsam apikarshati, says the great Manu. Not the wisest can say that he has controlled the senses. Because the senses have their own tactics. And like a whirlwind, they can act when the conditions are favorable around. And while they appear to be good friends, they can act as the worst enemies under given conditions. We are misconstruing the very relationship we have with the senses in imagining that they are our friends and that they give us correct reports about things outside us. They give us wrong reports, mislead us, and tell us lies, which we take for the whole truth, and get immersed in a mess of error after error piled one over the other. While we are in seclusion, we also have to get guidance from a spiritual master. It is impossible to get tired of repeating this necessity for a guru in the practice of yoga. And except perhaps in the last stage of consummation, we are always in need of a guide, because we are treading a very precipitous path and we are entering into regions of which we have absolutely no foreknowledge. Every stage of life in its ascent is a strange land for us, whose conditions may look frightening and quite unsuited to our temperament to which we have been accustomed earlier. When experiences come to us, they may come to us as surprises. In fact, every important or meaningful experience in life is a surprise to us. While there are no surprises in the world, everything is natural and normal, to us all these look as surprises because we have not been accustomed to them. We were used to live in a cocoon of our own personal imaginations and prejudiced ideas. And when truth reveals itself gradually, every degree of this revelation of truth comes as a wonder, a miracle, a surprise, etc. We have to be guarded in these conditions. Otherwise, we would not know who is standing before us and what is happening to us. Sometimes when we are seated in a railway train, the train will be going backward. We do not know what is happening. We intend the train to go forward, it is going backward in the rear direction. For some purpose it is doing, though that is a part of its forward movement. Likewise, there can be a retracement of our steps. An apparent fall even, which may look very startling to a sensitive seeker. All these have to be borne with fortitude, understanding, and with guidance from the preceptor that has to come to us from time to time. Either we have to be with our parents or with our guru. It is no use standing alone on our legs. Otherwise, life will be a danger. In physical sequestration, such as we have in holy atmosphere like Sri Badarnath, Kedarnath, or in a temple or a monastery, ashram, etc. In such atmospheres of solitude, we have to ponder over the aim of life, the purpose for which we have taken to such a life, and if necessary, write down in a private diary the various steps that we may have to take and the different troubles that may befall us. It is unwise to think that in seclusion we are always safe. Though seclusion is a necessity and it is supposed to be a protection from our involvement in unwanted environments, these environments can project themselves even in solitude. Because the undesirable environments are not always physical or external. They are only certain situations that are created externally by a susceptibility of our internal character. And as long as this susceptibility is there, the danger can be anywhere, even in the holy of holies of a temple. As medical men tell us, disease is a susceptibility to certain intrusions of external force. These forces are always there at all times. Sometimes we are impervious to them and at other times we are susceptible to them. When we are susceptible, it is that we get into the clutches of these undesirable forces. There is no use merely living in a physical solitude while there are unfulfilled desires. And bereavements, frustrations, demotions in office, etc. cannot be regarded as preconditions for the practice of yoga. This would be a great blunder if anyone thinks like that. There cannot be a greater positivity of approach than the spiritual life. And therefore, any negative condition of life cannot be a qualification for the practice of yoga. The negative conditions are frustrations of different type. Inability to get the requisite type of enjoyment and comfort in life may drive a person to spiritual life. That would not be a qualification. Rather, it would be a disqualification. Taking to a path that is spiritual is a positive yearning of the soul for a higher attainment because it is satisfied fully with all the lower types of experience, having understood them thoroughly, threadbare. Not because it could not take advantage of the comforts and facilities that the lower experiences would give. You must be capable of taking advantage of all the lower facilities of life and yet renounce them voluntarily. It should not be that circumstances are unfavorable for a comfortable life. Otherwise, there would be a sense of defeatism in the heart, an inferiority complex creeping into us, and a sorrow which may be deep-rooted even without our knowing that it is there. We may be looking small in the eyes of people on account of deficiency in our personality, which will drive us into a path that is godly or spiritual. But that would have a reaction, because the sense of inadequacy felt in our own selves, a smallness or inferiority that made us feel sorry and unhappy may react upon us by creating conditions sometime or the other which may sink us in those favorable conditions contributory to enjoyment of those very things which we could not get earlier. Anything that you want, you must get. This is the law of nature. And if you deeply want a thing, it must come to you. But wanting a thing and not getting it would not be a spiritual condition, because that condition would seek for fulfillment one day or the other. And it is these conditions that come as obstacles in the path of yoga. You must have heard through stories given in Puranas, epics, etc., that even great sages had obstacles of peculiar natures, coming not only from the external world here, but even from celestial realms. All these oppositions that one has to face in spiritual life are nothing but the reactions objectively set up by our susceptibility to pleasure or physical enjoyment, egoistic satisfaction, sensory contact, etc.
So while we are in physical solitude, we are not always free from danger. Sometimes we may be in a greater danger there than in public life and public atmosphere.
That is why in some of the scriptures dealing with the subject of renunciation, we are told that a person who leads an absolutely isolated life individually should not live in a village for more than 3 days, and in a town for not more than 5 days. All these precautions are given because there is a possibility of attachment or familiarity with the atmosphere. When we are familiar with conditions outside us, we also try to find out occasions for taking advantage of that familiarity and utilizing that familiarity for our personal satisfactions, physical, sensory, egoistic, etc. It is useless for a youngster especially, or a beginner, novitiate, to live absolutely alone without a proper guidance from a superior. Otherwise, there will be a fall with a thud and one would break the legs. It is necessary in the initial stages while living in physical solitude to live in the company of a group of people. If not, you have a guru by yourself who would be a sort of protection around you. Rather, it would be a mutual protection provided among one another by co-disciples or co-seekers. And in this physical solitude, we have to cultivate the art of psychological non-attachment. Because the purpose of physical solitude is this: to train the mind for the practice of higher yoga. Psychological non-attachment is a difficult thing, because while social pressure and social law and regulations can prevent you from physical contacts with unwanted centers or objects, nobody can prevent your mind from thinking. And your thoughts are your personality. What constitutes your strength or your weakness is the way in which you think. The physical conditions are not your strength and they are not also your weaknesses. What is in your mind, that is what you really are. And that is your strength and that is also your weakness. It is therefore
very futile on the part of anyone to think that one can lead a life of internal attachment while there can be an outward detachment, against which Bhagavan Shri Krishna warns us in the third chapter of the Gita. While all your physical organs may be detached from objects of sense, the internal senses may be in contact with the objects, setting up a reactionary force with a more violent contact with objects than you would have entered into merely by physical contact. Psychological contact is worse than physical contact, because the mind shakes up the entire personality, churns the whole bloodstream of our body, and in one place Bhishma speaks to Yudhishthira in the Shanti Parva of the Mahabharata. Wherein he says that the moment the mind thinks of a sensual object, the entire bloodstream is affected. A thing that we are unaware of. Just as milk curdles by a touch of acid, there is a breaking up of the indivisibility of milk. The strength of milk goes and it is no more milk at all, it becomes curd. It is spoiled. And you cannot reconvert it into milk. So also, an intense thought of a sensual object is like an acid poured into the bloodstream of our body, breaks up the indivisibility and the health of the blood and the energy of the blood is isolated from the blood, like butter coming out of milk by curdling. The vitality of our system is isolated from the bloodstream. And this vitality that is so cut off from the blood is forcefully diverted or directed towards the object which the mind has been craving. And you know what happens when vitality is diverted to an object? You become weak mentally and physically. And even as curd cannot be converted into milk, so also the energy that is lost forever. It is no use, therefore, thinking that thought of sense objects is harmless, says one of the Upanishads. Poison is not poison, thought of sense object is poison. Why? Snake poison can destroy only one life. But the poison of sense contact or sense thought can destroy several lives. It can cause repeated births through the cycle of metempsychosis. All these have to be brought into mind in seclusion. And the causes of attachment should be discovered. A thorough diagnosis of the case has to be made. The causes of the attachment are misconceptions that we have in regard to things of the world. We have a wrong notion about things and therefore we are attached to them. We do not understand things properly. And therefore we are made to cling to objects. There are many things that can attract us. Hundreds and thousands of things and conditions. But as far as spiritual practice is concerned, one has to be very, very cautious about three important prongs of human desire, which are the subjects of study in psychology and psychoanalysis. Mentioned also in the Upanishads as the Eshanas, Dharaeshana, Vitteshana, Lokeshana. These are the terms used in the Upanishads. These are the subjects studied by Western psychoanalysis, Freud, Adler and Jung. Interestingly enough. And these are our weaknesses. These are the weak spots in human nature. And the moment these weak spots are touched, the personality comes out like a hissing snake. And these weak spots are always covered by us with great carefulness. And we put on an artificial personality, which is itself a kind of disease, on account of which we are never happy any moment of our life. We have what we call a sense of self-respect, which is inseparable from our individual being. We have a sense of importance. This is Lokeshana. Or love of good name, fame, and it materializes itself into power. Later on, when it gets intensified, even an idiot has a sense of self-respect. But this is the precise character of the ego. It is an attachment to the body that we regard as self-respect. What is our importance? If you analyze our personality, if we analyze ourselves carefully and remove the fibers of our being individually, we we will find that there is nothing inside us which can be called of real importance. Whatever is of importance in us has come from somewhere else. The great words of Sri Swami Vivekananda comes to my mind. In a lecture he said, if there is anything worthy in me, it belongs to Sri Ramakrishna. If there is anything wrong, that is mine. Well, this is a tremendous attitude of humility and wisdom, which is unknown to us. Really speaking, an individual personality has no importance of its own. The importance that it assumes or it appears to have comes from the element of universality that is inherent in it. This is not known to anyone. It cannot be known because the ego repels a consciousness of the presence of even that element of universal in itself. We resent the universal so intensely that we would not even like to think about it. Because even to allow a thought of it is to reduce the importance of the ego, which is very painful to us. We are important. And sometimes it looks that our importance is not recognized or known to people. Then we try to publicize it by various means. And the ego knows the ways by which it can announce itself or advertise its importance. To free oneself from this evil of false self-respect, which has really no substance in it. Masters of yoga, teachers of spiritual life, tell us that we should live under conditions of humility. We should live a very, very simple life, so that the ego may not swell up unnecessarily. We should occupy the last seat and not the front seat in an audience. We may sit even near the shoes, even if you are a genius. It makes no difference. I was reminded of the goodness of Dr. K.S. Krishnan, who passed away. The director of the National Physical Laboratories in New Delhi. Once he came here, he is a very famous man, great personality in the field of science in India, perhaps even in the international field. He came here once with some other friends. He was looking very simple with the dhoti. And Swami Shivananda Maharaj has asked people to place a chair for him in the satsang. And one of the brahmacharis was sweeping and putting dari, and he kept a chair there, saying, "This is for Dr. Krishna." And by chance, Krishna happened to come there, and nobody would know that he was Dr. Krishna. By some freak, he came and sat on that chair, and immediately the brahmachari, "Hey," he said, "this is for Dr. Krishna. You should not sit here." "Oh, I see," he said, "sorry," he said. He got up and sat down on the floor. Then Swami Shivananda Maharaj came and, "Hey, you are sitting on the floor, you sit on the chair." "Oh, it's all right." No, he pulled him up and made him sit on. Then all look up. "This is the same man." The brahmachari felt so much ashamed. Now, any person would retort or show a sign of resentment. He was so good, but so important a personality he was, really speaking. The greatness of a person does not depend upon outward publicity or even recognition by others. It is a self-sufficient qualification which is self-existent and can shine by itself like the sun in the sky. It is absence of real importance that makes us feel that we are small and get annoyed when it is not recognized. The more is your vidya, the more also is your vinaya. The greater is your knowledge and wisdom, the deeper is your sense of humility. The bigger you become inwardly, the smaller you look outside in the eyes of people. So that when you are the largest inside, you may look almost nothing to the public eye. It is very important to remember the characteristics of a true spiritual life, which is the other side of egocentricity of any kind. And lokeshana, love of name, fame and power and self-affirmation of any kind is contrary to true spiritual aspiration. The complex of superiority, which is really not there, is a bane on human nature, which has to be avoided. There are other features, which are our weaknesses, we have to look into later on. Hari Om Tat Sat.